From the land of Grand Theatre Varsity in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 12th day of October, 2021. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up this afternoon, we'll talk about the commodity markets and how the reports at 11 o'clock, the crop production in WASDE, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, impacted the trade in Chicago with Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnutke will join us to take up custom farming figures. They've been updated for the year. And we'll also hear all about the weather forecast and the agricultural and energy sectors. We'll talk about that last one with Stephen Platt. He's at Archer Financial Services out of Chicago, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online and listen to us on demand whenever you'd like at willag.org, willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's start by recapping this morning's USDA report. They say the carry-in now is 1.236 billion bushels. That's what was left over from last year's corn crop. The crop production numbers show an 85.1 million acre harvest with 176.5 bushels to the acre for corn. That yield is up slightly from last month, and it puts total production at about 15 billion bushels. And ending stocks by the time we get to next fall at 1.5 billion bushels, with a cash price on the season at $5.45. Soybeans at 256 million bushel carry-in. That's not quite the 300 million bushel that most had expected. 86.4 million acres are expected to be harvested, and a 0.9 bushel increase in the yield to 51.5 bushels to the acre puts production at about 4.448 billion bushels per carryout for the fall of 2022 at 320 million bushels, and they drop the cash price there to $12.35 a bushel for soybeans. Now let's check the prices in Chicago as they settled up. December corn at 522.5, down 10.5 cents today. The March at 532, 10.25 lower. May futures 537.5, down a dime. And November beans were 30 lower at $11.98.25. January futures $12.10, down 29.75. And the March soybeans at 1220.5, down 29.5 cents. Bean meal futures at 313, down $4.10. The bean oil at 58.85, down $1.66 for the afternoon. Wheat futures soft red up 2.25 at $7.34 a bushel. The hard red at 7.39¾, up 5.25 for the day. And the oats were down 25 cents, by the way, at $6.48 a bushel. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby contract at $129.25. That was down 92.5 cents. Feeders were 7.5 cents lower at $161.80, and lean hogs at $78.17.5 were down $2 on this Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, now joins us to discuss what happened before and after the USDA reports. Why don't you divide that up for me to begin with? How did things go in the overnight trade and through the 11 o'clock hour today?
We were lower through the early morning trade and through the morning leading up into things. Looked like the crowd was looking that we were going to see some negative numbers, and then we saw the negative numbers and it got lower yet. There was confirmation that they did increase the carryout for next year, and that the crops are looking a little bit better out there, and then the yield moved up a little bit, to 51.5, and the beans up from 50.6, and went from 176.3 up to 176.5 on the corn. So, we added 92 million to the ending stocks in the corn and the world stocks, and 145 million in the bean stocks. So, we went down and we pushed some real support spots. The November beans, after the report, we got down under $12, and we closed at $11.98¼ today. That's breaking through that $12 support. And the corn also, down under $5.25.
So when you look at it at the end of the day, it appears to me that corn held on better than soybeans did, given where things managed to finish off. And trading for a good portion of the day after the USDA report, in fact. And I'm wondering whether that is a hopeful sign or whether that's just a realignment of the soy corn ratio to make it fit better for next year.
Well, I think as you look at things and we're looking ahead the way it goes, we're seeing the beans just seem to be produced better than what a lot of guys were thinking out west. Number one, we're not seeing any bean business hardly out of China. They're still going to South America. We have watched and lost just about a month of good soybean export timing with the way the hurricane did to us. So yeah, the beans just seem a little bit more negative, a little bit heavy, and we just aren't seeing what we need to do that. You're looking about South America, they're getting some rains. They're getting their plantings done more timely. Argentina isn't, but Brazil is moving ahead. They're looking at increased acres of beans. And look at fertilizer costs for next year on corn. And we might pick up some more bean acres here in the U.S. just on that too, Todd. So beans look a little heavier at this point in time than the corn does. And I think there's a little more actual opportunity to look as we get back to rolling down in the Gulf to maybe get these corn exports to start picking up a little better.
Yeah, back to corn in the USDA report. The change from month to month, I think it showed what we in the Eastern Corn Belt thought would happen, but I don't think it showed what those in the Western Corn Belt thought would happen. And I think it all has to do with what happened here. So USDA has what? Lowered by percentage Ohio, Illinois, and Indiana by 1.1 in Ohio, 1.5% down in Indiana, and 1.9% in Illinois. And then Iowa, Nebraska, and Minnesota were all up among some others in the Western Corn Belt. I don't know that everybody thought that that was the way it was going to turn out.
No, but as you talk to people from different areas and talk to guys that have friends or relatives in Minnesota, Nebraska, Iowa, and places like that, their yields have been a little better than what we thought they were going to be for the rain they had. These hybrids just sort of kicked in a little better out west than we really thought they did, and they weren't suffering near as bad as we thought they could be because we knew that we had some fairly good yields and they were pumped up in the early estimations for the Eastern Corn Belt. And then maybe we've had the lack of rain in August did hurt us, took us off those tremendously going to be record yields down into good yields. And out west, I think the late rain that come out there because of being behind helped them a little more than we thought it was going to.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
It's Wayne Nelson with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and I would be amiss if I didn't tell you that the Illinois record yield, which was 214, has been backed off now to 210 bushels to the acre. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, now joins us to discuss his latest penning for the Farm Doc Daily website. This one is entitled Machinery Cost Estimates for 2021. I take it you update these every couple of years or so.
Yep. Yes, we do. We arrive at machinery cost for field operations, combining or harvesting, forage operations, and tractors every 2 years. And a lot of people use those to set custom rates as they're performing field operations.
Let's skip straight to the bottom in the summary. I thought it was pretty straightforward, and then we'll tease out some of the numbers.
Yeah, so all the costs are going up. We have those costs going up 3-5%. What's leading those cost increases are increases in in machinery prices. And we saw those go up on tractors. We saw some list price increases from 2019 to 2021 in the 10-20% range. And so those list price increases then led to cost per acre increases.
Can you detail, since we're in the middle of harvest, the harvesting costs and what those you think should look like?
Yeah, so for combining corn, our 2019 estimate was $37.60. We came up with a $38.50 for combining corn and soybeans. $32.70 was the 2019 estimate. We increased that to $33.40. Again, a lot of that has to do with increases in list prices. So we saw those go up. Countering that somewhat, though, is declines in interest rates. So as interest rates come down, the cost of financing those machines also come down. And we're now at historically low interest rates. So the list price increases were countered somewhat by lower interest rates.
Because I don't have the numbers directly in front of me, but I do have your paperwork, you talk about machinery costs for the tractors and for field operations. Are those two separate things that need to be added together when folks figure this out, or is it all one and you give them the size of the tractor and the field operation?
No, when we provide estimates, for example, our chisel plow, we estimate the cost of performing a chisel plow operation is $13.60. That includes both the tractor and the implement itself. And so we estimate those costs together and give a per acre number. We also do, though, give per hour estimates of tractor operation. So if you want to estimate the tractor hour cost on a per hour basis, we also include those.
And tractors, you have broken out by size and horsepower.
Yes, we have many different tractors. We go on our cost estimates. We go from some fairly small tractors. Our smallest tractor is an 85 horsepower, and our highest horsepower tractor is a 640 horsepower tractor, which would obviously be a four-wheel drive.
And how do you make these calculations?
So what we do is collect list prices for these implements, both the tractors, the implements for field operations, the combines, the headers. We collect those list prices. We use ASAE, American Society of Agricultural Engineers, to estimate cost on a per hour and per acre basis, and then we make assumptions about fuel prices, labor cost, and interest rates. So for example, we're using a diesel fuel price now of $2.75, and we raise or lower that will increase the cost of fuel associated with all these field operations.
Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome, Todd.
Gary Schnittke is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He joined me on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. On Thursday, I hope you will join me online for the next in the Farm Doc Daily webinar series. This is the fall update. This time around, we'll be talking a little bit about grain returns for this year and for next year. Bob Ray, Dale Latz, and Nick Paulson will join me. We'll talk about the production costs, which have been rising substantially this year. And those three will summarize grain farm financial statements for farms enrolled in the Illinois FBFM. That's the Farm Business Farm Management Record Keeping Program. And they'll present their projections for the future. That's at 11 a.m. this Thursday. You can go to the Farm Doc Daily website, get yourself signed up there at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, or just scroll to the bottom of the page and look in the calendar at willag.org. You'll find a link. You'll have to cut and paste that one, but you can get yourself registered. And if you've already been joining us for this webinar series, we have a couple of more right through the end of the month, and you won't have to do anything in that case because you're already signed up. This Thursday, again, we'll be talking about grain returns for 2021 and 2022 in the state of Illinois. That with Bob Ray, Dale Latz, and Nick Paulson. And we'll be using the FBFM record-keeping system as a benchmark. Now, Don Day's out of the office today, so I'll take you through the weather forecast for the week. It's pretty simple. In Iowa and Illinois, we should have rainfall on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, or at least some, and the temperatures will be in the low 70s in both states, in the mid-50s to mid-40s in both states. And by the time we get to the end of the week, Iowa tops out at 59 degrees and Illinois at 63. Our bottom High actually is on Saturday at 60 degrees, although we'll have sunny skies then. Lincoln, Nebraska will have sunshine a good portion of the week, maybe a little rainfall tomorrow, but of course they'll be cooler as well, 63, 63, and 69 on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Their lows will drop all the way back into the upper 30s by the time they get to the weekend in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Some rainfall tomorrow. A 63-degree high, 59, 55, and 61 through the weekend, then on Saturday. And they'll stay in the low 40s for their overnight lows. Indianapolis, Indiana, a little bit warmer, 73, and a cloudy sky tomorrow, 53 is their low tomorrow evening. Thursday, maybe some rain. Friday, Saturday, also possible rain. They'll range on their high on Thursday, and this is the highest temperature we really see at 78 degrees. But then drop back to 72 and 66 and 62 by the time they get to sunny Sunday of this week in Indiana. And finally, in Fargo, North Dakota, their temperatures are topping out early in the week. 58 today, tomorrow as well. 53 on Thursday, 49 Friday. And then back up into the upper 50s to the low 60s for the weekend. Their low, by the way, comes on Saturday evening at 37 degrees. Let's check in on this Tuesday afternoon with Stephen Platt from Archer Financial Services. Hey, Steve, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
And can you give me a broad overview of the agricultural and energy sectors together? Because there's just a whole lot that's been happening here.
In the energy complex, it's almost been a perfect storm. Crude prices have surged by over $6 since the end of September to reach a high of $82 before backing off here recently. These are the highest prices we've seen since 2014, when the shale production started to really boom.
Well, what's behind this move in that case?
One has been the surge that we saw in nat gas prices, not just in the U.S., but they actually were substantially higher in Europe and Asia to more than five times the five-year average of nat gas prices there.
How about here in the United States, they've been moving up too?
We've doubled our gas prices in this country, but Europe and China and the rest of Asia has seen dramatically higher prices. That's almost equating to crude, some people suggesting, of over close to $200 in terms of that kind of move and the energy equivalent. Subsequently, we saw a lot of switching, or at least the prospect for switching over from crude oil or from nat gas over to crude in those areas, which is actually bolstering our demand outlook by up to 500,000 barrels over the next maybe 3 to 6 months. This has never happened on such a global scale that we've seen. Many are suggesting demand for crude will ratchet up as a result of that price spike in nat gas in those areas, and that you'll have to see the substitution of petroleum derivatives for nat gas.
Are there other factors that have been moving the market too?
Another factor has been OPEC, cautious approach to increasing production. This has led to a tightening in availability. The agreement to stick to its original production scheme of adding about 400,000 barrels per day monthly until April has actually fallen short. particularly with respect to African producers. COVID and lack of investment in new wells because of what we saw over the past couple years in terms of the COVID problems and the demand prospects, along with the world's pivot away from fossil fuels to greener energy sources and strains on supply chains, have limited the availability of vital equipment for maintenance of wells. And this has all contributed to lower production in some areas, with the production cuts actually being more than what they had even dictated in their agreement. Compliance levels for OPEC are around 116% right now with the production cuts. So it is actually cutting more than what they want. Right now, near the $83 area basis prompt crude, we probably need to have some caution, certainly on the even long side. The expectation, and I think the prospect that demand might suffer due to the higher prices, could lead to some prospect that demand will fall short of expectations. Shortages of electricity could throttle back potential growth in China, which is also a potential concern. In addition, the sharp price spikes in diesel and to a lesser extent gasoline might also curb disappearance. While investment in exploration and production in the oil industry has been curtailed over the past year and a half, it could be a focus in 2022 with some expansion possible. We also might even see the U.S. government take action to quell the higher prices by emergency release of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which is used in these cases of potential shortages.
Anything else before I let you go?
Tomorrow we'll be getting the DOE report. They're not looking for a big change, but we'll also be seeing tomorrow the OPEC supply-demand numbers. And those are that's a great report to refer to out of OPEC. They do provide some really great supply-demand statistics. The IEA will also be coming out with their report on Thursday. So at this juncture, the market's getting overbought. We could pull back, maybe see potential for prices to dip to the 77 area near term. But I think the support's going to be pretty stiff down at those levels if we do see that kind of setback at some point.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Stephen Plant is with Archer Financial Services, joined us here on the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.